It is not normally my custom to give career advice, but reflecting on one or two different stories lately, I realized that being a dictator gives you great latitude. I'll give you one example that comes to us by way of ancient Persia, reported, I believe, by Herodotus, the Greek historian, that the son of Cyrus, Cambyses, wanted to marry his sister. This ties into today's Torah portion, but I won't go into his motivations. We'll just leave it at that. And because he wanted to give a patina, an appearance of legality to these proceedings, he called his court lawyers and asked them to find a law in the Persian law that would permit him to marry his sister. And they searched and searched and came back to him and said, "We're sorry, we can't find any law that permits you to do that, but we did find a law that says that the king of Persia may do whatever he likes." I was reminded of this story earlier this week when I was teaching the book of Daniel. And the book of Daniel, at the very beginning, long before any lions or dens, has to do with Nebuchadnezzar, the king who destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel, exiled many Israelites, took many into captivity. And it says at the beginning of the book that what he did was he corralled the best and brightest of the various populations that he had overrun and brought them into his kingdom and into his domain to teach them the language, the mores, the traditions of his kingdom so that they could serve him with their talents and their background. And among those was Daniel and his friends. And one day Nebuchadnezzar had a very disturbing dream. And so he called his wise men together and he said, "I want you to interpret my dream and I want you to give me the proper interpretation on pain of death." And they said, "Sure, we will give you the proper interpretation. Don't you worry." But Nebuchadnezzar, who was no fool, said, "I don't trust you. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to give you the dream. You're going to give me whatever interpretation seems as though it will take the longest to be realized because you want to live." In fact, he said, and here is where the question of dictatorial latitude comes in, "I want you to tell me what I dreamed and its interpretation on pain of death." They said, "Nobody can do that." At which point Daniel makes an appearance. And what Daniel does, which is unprecedented, after all, Joseph interprets dreams, but Pharaoh's got to tell him what it is. But what Daniel does is tell Nebuchadnezzar what his dream was and what it means. And I was struck by that because it means, in part, that real wisdom is not only understanding the dreams of others, but knowing what they are. And the way you know another's dream, if God doesn't whisper it into your ear, is by sharing with that other person a part of your character that you have in common. How do you know what someone else feels? It's by imaginative empathy, by taking part of yourself and being for a moment Nebuchadnezzar. After all, as Whitman said, we are large and contain multitudes. There are lots of people inside of us. Inside of us are kings and commoners. We have multiple identities. And for a moment, Daniel, even though he was a captive from another land, imagined what it was to be the ruler of the world. This is, according to one of his most famous critics, what made Shakespeare Shakespeare. Not that he had the greatest mind, but he had the most comprehensive soul. He knew what it was to be a king. He knew what it was to be a jester. He knew what it was to be oppressed. So this morning, I want to appeal to a part of our identities, to a piece of ourselves, so that we can imagine someone else's dream. I want to speak to the immigrants in us. And I don't only mean the part of us that came from another place. For those of us who, in our own lives, arrived at these shores, I'm also talking about historical empathy. Ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim, because you know what it is to be a stranger, to be an immigrant, to be a wanderer, because you were immigrants. You were strangers in the land of Egypt. Yagur itcha ger ba'artzechem, says our Torah portion, when a stranger resides among you, a ger, a stranger, lo tonu oto, you may not wrong him, but more, ve'ahavta lo kamocha, you shall love him as you love yourself, ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim, because you were strangers, you were immigrants, you know what it is to go from one place to another, therefore you must understand their dreams as you understand their own. Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God. And when the commentators say, why does it finish with I'm the Lord your God? After all, the point's been made. What is added by God saying I'm the Lord your God? They say, remember, I created all of you. There is an essential sameness to you. And to the immigrant, to the other, who looks different, who doesn't seem like you. In this morning's Haftarah, from the book of Amos, I wonder if any of you noticed the first lines. It says, Halo kivnei kushim atem li b'nei Yisrael. To me, Israel, you are just like the Ethiopians. True, I brought the Israelites up from Egypt, says God. But I brought the Philistines from Kaftor and the Arameans from Kir. This isn't only an argument against ethnocentrism, against thinking we're the only ones who ever got delivered. That's not true, says Amos. I delivered them, and I delivered you. You're not so special. It is also an argument for remembering that everyone is an immigrant, that the word native has no real meaning in historical perspective. And also that the resentment and the distance and the dislike of the other is as deep and as old as human beings. I have said many times that much as I love Rodgers and Hammerstein, they were wrong when they wrote the song, Hate Must Be Carefully Taught. All you gotta do is go to a playground and you'll see that cliquishness, pushing away the other, disliking and distrusting the immigrant is deeply rooted in us. It is the opposite that must be carefully taught. And that's why the Torah teaches us, Gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. You were strangers in a strange land, in Eretz Nochriya, in a place where you didn't know what you were supposed to do, where you didn't speak the language and you didn't know the mores. You know what it's like. Don't forget it. Look at yourself in the mirror. And as Emerson said, you look at yourself in the mirror not to see how handsome you are, but to see whether your face is clean. That's what we have to ask ourselves. Do we bring our knowledge, our emotional empathy, our sympathy, our understanding of what it is to be a stranger, to the treatment of the strangers in our midst? There are, according to a very old saw, only two plots in the world, two kinds of stories. The first story is going on a journey, and the second story is a stranger comes to town. And all plots are variations of one of those two. The journey can be internal, it can be external. If you look at foreign policy, it seems like the same division, and even domestic policy. It's about either going on a journey or having someone come to us. And there are infinite nuances, variations playing out of those plots in the world. And what I am here to do God knows, is not to suggest a policy on immigration. I don't know, I couldn't tell you, and even if I knew, I wouldn't be so foolish as to tell you, but I don't. I'm not here to advocate a policy. I'm here to inspire an attitude, to remind us, ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim, v'ahavta oto, that person is just like you. And if that person is not like you today, that person is like you 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. If you ask me what I am most grateful for in my life, I'm not sure that I could pick any one thing, but right up there would be that my great-grandparents, through some combination of courage and pluck and good fortune and foresight, left Eastern Europe and came here. And that they were let in. Because I know what would have happened to them had they not come here. But I also know that Jews and others have moved around the world not only to save their lives, but to improve their lives. Not just so their families wouldn't be destroyed, but so that their families would do better. And that is a noble, not an ignoble motive. I know, as you do, that our ancestors, our grandparents, our great-grandparents took the sea more traveled by, and that made all the difference. And that's why we're here. Now, Jewish tradition is not unaware of the problem of adulteration of the native culture. You remember when the Jews left Egypt, the rabbis teach us there was an Erev Rav, there was a rabble that left. Egyptians who weren't doing very well in Egypt and said, oh look, the Israelites are leaving, let's go be Israelites. And the rabbis say that much of the trouble that was caused in the desert and later was because some, to put it in modern terms, the population wasn't fully integrated into the culture of the Israelites. I don't mean to gloss over the complexities and the problems. They are real. But they're not the central point. The central point isn't policy. Not this morning, not in a synagogue. The central point is how we feel and how we speak to each other and to ourselves about people who are unlike us. That's what touches our souls. That's what we have to guard. No Jew has a right to have the chutzpah, the arrogance, the hubris to be a nativist, to say, we belong here and they don't. When we have throughout history scream to the heavens again and again when we went from country to country to country and we're not welcomed. We have to have a certain becoming humility, a certain openness, a certain understanding, whatever public policy ultimately proves wise and we ultimately adopt. In the Yerushalmi, in the Talmud, some young disciples of Rav Elazar were late for their class. Apparently a sin in ancient times as in modern. And Rav Elazar said to them, where were you? And they said, well, we were out doing a mitzvah, fulfilling some religious commandment. And he said, whatever the religious commandment was that you were fulfilling, I'm sure someone else could have done it. And they said, we were doing it for a ger, for a stranger. At which point, says the Talmud, Rav Elazar knew that he had taught them well. Now, why is it that he didn't say to them, someone else could have done it for the ger? I'm guessing that it is because he knew that when you refuse to do something for a stranger, they don't see it as a rejection of them as an individual, but a rejection of them as a type. You won't do it for me because I'm a stranger. It's not because you're late for a class. It's because I'm not part of your community. And since they went out of their way to welcome the stranger, Rav Elazar knew that what they had done was good. We need to keep that in mind. We need to remember in our personal interactions, in our discussion, in the way we speak about others to our children who listen to us. That there was a time when they were talking about us, and there are places in the world where they still do. In the 1950s, Ben Gurion, a few years after the founding of the state, when the Iraqi Jews were first being brought out of the captivity of Iraq, a land where long ago Nebuchadnezzar flourished, Ben Gurion went to a class of Iraqi Jews who had just arrived, and he stood before them and he said to them, "I have a question to ask you. Who was the first Zionist?" And the children, who had just started to learn the history of the modern state, raised their hands, and one said, "Chaim Weizmann," and Ben-Gurion said no. And another said, "Theodore Herzl," and Ben-Gurion said no. And finally, when none of them got it right, he said, "The first Zionist was an Iraqi Jew. His name was Abraham." And God said to him, "Lech lecha, me'artzecha u'mimoladcha u'mibet avicha. Leave your home, the place where you grew up, the house of your parents. Leave everything you know, because I'm going to make a new life for you in a new land." That's how we started. But we're not the only ones who started that way. And we are not the only ones who will start that way in the future. So let's remember, the first Jew was an immigrant. He met sometimes with a pleasant reception and sometimes with one that was not so pleasant, but all of his descendants know how he felt, because we carry it in our spiritual DNA. We know what it is to be a stranger. So in as much as we can, as individuals and as a society, let us embrace the stranger, for he and she is us. Shabbat Shalom.